morning. The Healthcare Regulation Subcommittee will come to order. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Chair Salzman.
Here.
Representatives Burfield.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Abbott.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Baker.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Batana.
Here.
Cheney.
Here.
Franklin, excused. Humchowski, excused. Persons Mulica.
Here.
Rudman.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Trabuzzi.
Here.
Quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Sabrina. I want to remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. Welcome to each of you to the Healthcare Regulation Subcommittee. I'm honored to serve as your chair, and I would like to thank Speaker Renner for this opportunity to serve. I also want to make a quick note on our jurisdiction because it has changed slightly since last session. Previously, our jurisdiction covered the Department of Health and the Agency for Healthcare Administration. Our jurisdiction now covers just the Department of Health. This includes ranging from healthcare practitioners regulating activities that have a direct impact on public health in the state. I'd like to welcome back all of the returning members, and I want to welcome two new members to the committee. We have Vice Chair Burfield and Representative Botana. Vice Chair Burfield, would you like to introduce yourself to the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is a pleasure to have been appointed to this committee. I'd like to thank Speaker Renner for his confidence in providing me the opportunity to be Vice Chair. I have served on a variety of different healthcare committees in the past. My background, I have worked with All Children's Hospital for 6 years. I'm no longer there, but also worked with the Florida Department of Health for 6 years as well in the past. So I look forward to bringing that expertise and knowledge to the committee and working with you all. Thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to serving alongside you. So as we all know, Florida has a healthcare provider shortage. This shortage is predicted to continue into the foreseeable future and will likely worsen with the aging and growth of population. Today, we will hear presentations from the Department of Health and the Florida Center for Nursing discussing physician and nursing workforce shortages. We will begin today with an update on physician workforce by Emma Spencer, who is the Division Director for the Division of Public Health Statistics and Performance Management within the Department of Health. Welcome, Dr. Spencer. Good morning. You're recognized to speak before the committee.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Salzman, Vice Chair Burfield, and Ranking Member Bartleman, and other members of the committee. As mentioned, I'm Emma Spencer. I'm the Division Director for Public Health Statistics and Performance Management at the Florida Department of Health, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. This presentation will focus on presenting a brief overview of physician and nursing workforce in Florida. When we say healthcare workforce, we mean health professionals working in a health setting and assist with the delivery of health services. To understand the healthcare workforce, we need to understand the industry. Data from the Florida Commerce Bureau of Workforce Statistics from 2023 categorizes both the industry and the occupations that fall within them. These data are categorized within the healthcare and social assistance services occupational groupings. That industry and the occupations within them are the third fastest growing in Florida, with 8 out of 10 fastest growing occupations are in the healthcare sector, with physicians and nurses comprising the largest segment of the healthcare workforce. In this slide, we're continuing to look at the data from the Florida Commerce. When examining employment projections by educational attainment of a master's degree or higher, the projected growth from 2022 to 2030 is greatest for nurse practitioners, with physicians representing the third fastest growing occupation who are requiring a master's degree or higher in Florida. There is growing demand for healthcare staff, and job growth is expected across most types of healthcare professions and settings. Projections show demands for physicians across the United States is outpacing the supply. The Association of American Medical Colleges projects up to 124,000 physician shortfall by 2034, and this includes shortfalls in both primary and specialty care. The demand for nurses is also expected to grow. Looking at the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics data, there's an expected growth in the profession that's projected to grow just over 213,000 or 7% across the United States. Similarly, for the advanced practice registered nurses, the projected growth for this profession is almost 120,000 or 40%. Several factors will contribute to this demand, including an increased emphasis on preventative care and a demand for healthcare services from an aging population. In this slide, we're using the data from the Association of American Medical Colleges, published in 2021. We provide the rate of physicians per 100,000 population across the United States. The national rate of active physicians, which includes those licensed by a state and who work more than 20 hours a week working in direct patient care, is 286.5 physicians per 100,000 population. On the map, green represents those that have a higher rate of physicians per 100,000 population, and purple represents those that have a lower rate of physicians. In this map, Florida is in the average range for physicians rates per 100,000 population, and they are listed in red. Florida ranks 25th among United States in active physicians per 100,000 population. Now looking at Florida specifically, using data from the Florida Department of Health's Medical Quality Assurance licensure data from 2021 through 2022, we can see that the rates per 100,000 population of physicians are generally concentrated in the urban areas and high population counties. These are green on the map, with the highest number of physicians being in Miami-Dade by volume, followed by Broward, Hillsborough, Palm Beach, and Orange counties. The counties with the lowest rates are represented in purple. In the next few slides, I'm going to focus on providing data from the Physicians Workforce Survey using data from the 2022 report. Florida statute authorizes the Physicians Workforce Survey, which is administered to physicians when they renew their license every 2 years. These results are analyzed annually by the department, and findings are documented through the Physicians Workforce Annual Report, which is submitted to the governor and the legislature annually. Out of the 91,269 licensed physicians in 2022, 88% of physicians renewed their license during the 21-22 renewal cycle and responded to the survey. The next few slides will focus on a subset of those, the physicians who are practicing and providing direct patient care, the 58,062. Here, we represent from the physician survey the growth in Florida licensed physicians who are providing direct patient care through between 2012 and 2022. We've seen an increase in physicians who provide direct patient care over the years. While we've seen a 33.8% increase since 2012 through 2020 through current year, the average increases each year during this time period is a growth of just 3%. Just for reference, Florida's overall population has increased by 15% during that same time period. Looking at data again from the physician survey, of those licensed physicians who are providing direct patient care, 25.2% are between the ages of 50 to 59, closely followed by those who are aged between 40 and 49 at 25.1%. The average age of physicians during the 2021-2022 license renewal cycle was 53 years old. Additionally, 33% of Florida's physicians in the survey cycle providing direct patient care are over the age of 60, highlighting an aging workforce where Florida ranks sixth among all states for the highest percentage of physicians in this over 60 age group. The survey asks a series of questions about physicians' plans to relocate. In the 2020 survey cycle, nearly 5% of physician workforce in Florida stated that they were planning on moving out of the state in the next 5 years. Looking at the primary reasons for relocation, 34% stated family reasons were their main reason on why they're planning on leaving the state. In this slide, we will discuss the retirement plans of physicians providing direct patient care. The survey asks if physicians are planning on retiring in the next 5 years, and for the 2022 data, approximately 10% of physicians in Florida stated they were planning on retiring in the next 5 years. The map on the slide shows the percentage of physicians planning to retire in the next 5 years, with the areas in green having the greatest percentage of retiring physicians and purple having lowest percentage of retiring physicians. We also list here 9 counties where at least 25% of their physicians indicated on the physician workforce survey that they are planning to retire within the next 5 years. Retirements are disproportionately impacting these smaller counties. In the next couple of slides, I'm going to focus on the physician primary care workforce. Primary care physicians practice in general internal, family medicine, and general pediatrics. This slide shows the rates per 100,000 population for 2020 data from the American Medical College's state physician workforce data. Green on the map indicates those areas with the greatest rates of primary care physicians, and purple indicates those areas with the lowest rates of primary care physicians per 100,000 population. The national rate of primary care physicians is 94.4 physicians per 100,000. Florida in blue ranks 31st in the United States for primary care physician availability with a rate of 88.5 physicians per 100,000 population. Looking more specifically at Florida's primary care workforce in this slide, we show the rate of primary care physicians by county on the map. Again, with green indicating the highest rate of 100,000 and purple indicating the lowest rate of primary care physicians per 100,000. We note here 3 counties that have higher rates than the state average provided on the previous slide, the 88.5 per 100,000. That's Alachua, Seminole, and Sarasota counties. The rates are actually provided in parentheses on the slide, and the numbers are not in parentheses. Additionally, we provide the rates for Florida's 3 largest counties as well, so you can see how many primary care physicians they have per 100,000. Primary care is an integral part of the healthcare delivery in Florida. We present the data from the Physicians Annual Workforce Survey for 2022. Through the survey, we know that a third of the physicians who provide direct patient care to Floridians provide primary care specifically. Of those providing primary care, 44.8 stated they specialize in family medicine, 38.1 specialized in internal medicine, and 17.1 specialized in pediatrics. In these next few slides, I'm going to transition and move to discuss more focus on the nursing workforce. We had previously discussed rates when we were talking about the physician workforce using similar data. Here, I just wanted to note that these are actually numbers, not rates. And these are the numbers of active RN licenses by state on this slide. On the map, purple represents the lowest number of active RN licenses, and green represents the greatest number of active RN licenses per state. The most populous state make up the top 5 states for the greatest number of active RN licenses, and Florida ranks 4th in the number of active RN licenses and is noted in green on the map. Concentrating on Florida-specific data, the map here represents the rate of registered nurses and LPNs by county, with those counties in purple having the lowest rates and those in green having the highest rates per 100,000. And again, the rates here are noted in parentheses. The top 10 counties with the highest rates of nurses are listed on the slide, with some of the smaller counties, such as Baker and Jackson, having a larger per capita number of nurses as compared to the larger metropolitan areas. Nurses comprise the largest portion of the healthcare workforce in Florida, with just under 450,000 licensed nurses in Florida during the 2021-2022 license renewal cycle. Within nurses specifically, RNs account for 74% of the nursing workforce, LPNs 16% of the nurse workforce, and the more specialized advanced practice registered nurses making up just over 10% of the nursing workforce in the state. To further understand the nursing workforce in Florida, we also need to understand the settings in which nurses work. According to the most recent report from the Florida Center of Nursing, 37% of APRNs in the first bar on the chart work primarily in hospital settings, that's listed in purple, with 27% of APRNs also working in physician practice settings, and that's on in blue on the first bar. In the second bar on the chart, 67% of Florida's registered nurses also work in a hospital setting located in purple on the chart. In contrast, LPNs in the third bar work mainly in the elder care settings, and that's shown in black in the chart, with 41% of LPNs working in this type of setting. Again, using the most recent data from the Florida Center of Nursing, the age of registered nurses in Florida during the 2021-2022 license renewal cycle is provided in the chart on the right. Just under 40% of registered nurses in Florida are under 40 years old, with the median age of registered nurses in Florida being 46 years old. However, 20% or 65,000 are 60 years or older and may leave the workforce in the next 5 to 10 years. So now that I've provided you an overview of the state of the physician and nursing workforce in Florida, I want to touch briefly on how we identify health professional shortage areas. This slide provides some definitions that you may be familiar with. We use health professional shortage area designations, or HPSAs, to primarily identify areas, population groups, or facilities within the state that are experiencing a shortage of healthcare professionals. There's also medically underserved areas and or populations that are primarily designated by HRSA as having too few primary care providers, high infant mortality, high poverty, or high elderly population. Additionally, in Florida, the state surgeon general can also determine additional areas of critical need, but generally uses the HPSA designation. So since we are focusing primarily on HPSAs, I wanted to show you how many HPSAs there are in primary care HPSAs there are in Florida. At present, there are 253 primary care HPSAs in the state. For primary care HPSAs, red indicates whole counties that have been designated as a HPSA, and blue indicates that parts of the county are within a HPSA area. Based on this, it's indicated that Florida would need approximately 1,180 primary care physicians to address the need of the state's Medicaid and uninsured populations in these areas. One of the strategies that the state is using to address the primary care need in these areas is the Medical Education Loan Repayment Program, also known as FRAME, which is the Florida Reimbursement Assistance for Medical Education, that is administered by the Florida Department of Health. This program has the goal to encourage qualified medical professionals to practice in underserved locations of the state, and FRAME provides annual payments to offset loans and educational expenses to nurses, advanced practice nurses, physicians assistants, and physicians. This concludes my presentation, and I'd like to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Members, Representative Redmond, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a series of questions, if that's permissible.
Yes, you just need to go through me for each question.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Spencer, thank you so much for that informative briefing. There was a lot of information on those slides that I was looking forward to hearing I especially appreciate the fact that you were focusing on physician shortages. You know, I know we hit upon other areas, but of course we all know that physicians, they are the engine of healthcare delivery. So thank you for that attention to physicians. Let's get a number out of the way first. Would you happen to know the average salary or the average income of a Florida physician?
You're recognized.
Thank you. At present, I do not know that number, but I can take it back and we can definitely provide that for you.
You're recognized.
Would it be safe to maybe say $180,000, $200,000? Does that seem reasonable?
You're recognized.
Yes.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you give us an idea of what would limit one's income when you're a physician? I would imagine, for example, if you're an employed physician, if you work for a hospital, I would imagine the ceiling on your income will be whatever your employer is willing to pay you. And that's the great majority of physicians in the state. Whereas solo practitioners like myself, you're really unlimited. I mean, you can basically work as many days, as many hours as you please. Would you agree with that?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. That is outside of my scope, unfortunately. I'm not a physician, so I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Thank you. Representative Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question because I speak to a lot of primary care physicians, and it's my, and clearly there's a shortage. Is it true that they have some of the lowest reimbursement rates? Can you answer the and give me a differential of the rates?
Recognized.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, that is outside of my scope, but I can look into that for you and we can get that information.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would ask, Chair, do our staff know the reimbursement rates? Because I just want to, because that's the biggest issue I hear is reimbursement rates.
Thank you for that question. That's handled through ACA, and that's not that's, in the jurisdiction of this committee no longer. That's under Representative Tuck.
Got it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. And then my second question goes to in terms of the doctors, what do you think, based on, you presented a survey of where they're going, but you didn't present any data as to what we could do to help them stay. Did you have any questions in your survey that asked them that we could use to make policy decisions?
You're recognized.
No, that is not a question currently on the physician workforce survey.
Follow-up.
Thank you. I'm sure it took you a lot of time to put the survey together. I think for me as a policymaker, I would like to hear what we could do to keep them in Florida. And I think that we know what the problem is. We know it just by looking at the numbers, but that to me would be the most important information we could have to make a change. So if you do that survey again, I think it would be important to include that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shoaf, you're recognized. I mean, oh my gosh, I just called you Shoaf. Well, you do live next to him, right? Or do y'all join? Okay. All right. Representative Abbott, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have the data from our state colleges on how many seats are available per year versus how many they're utilizing and filling each year?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I don't have that data with me today.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Spencer, for your presentation. There was a slide that indicated why physicians were leaving. The number one reason was family. The second was financial, I believe. Can you break that down a little bit for me? What falls under that family category? And financial, does that mean that they can't make it here financially? The reimbursement rates are low? What does it break down to mean?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thanks for that question. I would like to be able to go back and be able to look at the data a little further to answer that question. At present, the questions just ask very broadly, you know, a list of categories on what they, what some of the reasons are why they may leave the state.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is it just check a box, check the family box, check the financial box, or is it fill it out and you interpret it to mean family or financial or whatever?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I can provide you with the survey questions so that you can see, so that I'll be able to explain it a little better.
Thank you. If you could just send that through us, we'll send it to the whole committee so they can all get it. Because I think we had other questions pertaining to the survey and why certain things weren't asked. Next up, we have Vice Chair Bearfield. You're recognized for a series of questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I kind of want to follow up with where Representative Skidmore was going, because I think it's important, and the other comment that was made about it, is to understand what the survey is actually telling us. Because as I look back, I think about when the nursing survey was started in 2006 for the purpose of trying to address the shortage. And if we don't know those specifics, then how can we assist you? How can we assist our businesses by making those types of policies or adjusting them in a manner that will successfully either keep those who are practicing here or encourage people to practice here? So I think we really need to look at that, Madam Chair, moving forward, if there's some additional digging that we need to do for policy positions. The question that I had passed there actually dealt with GME, and I know that you do another report, and it's not something we've specifically discussed today, but it does tie into this. As you look at GME, there are certain things that are challenges and so forth. And I think they tie into the shortages that we're experiencing. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the issues that are being experienced there that are triggering some of the shortages that we're looking at? Is it slots? Is it the funding? Is it the number that we have? If you could give us a little bit of perspective from that standpoint.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So we actually aren't looking into GME, but we do work with the Physicians Workforce Advisory Council, and they are charged to assess GME. And part of their strategic plan, of which they are going to be working on this next year, will be focusing on addressing those exact problems.
Follow up.
Yeah, you're recognized.
So at this point in time, we don't know if the slots, the numbers, or anything along those lines, the funding, are things that we need to be working on to preserve the workforce that we currently have.
You're recognized.
Do you know that? Maybe that's more.
I do not know that.
Madam Chair, I'd suggest that may be something we want to look into, because that's going to have the domino effect on the workforce if
Thank
we don't
you.
Have those slots available.
Any further questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I am in the panhandle and represent a lot of the purple swaths and the green swaths and wherever we have a seeming, the only county that is doing a little bit better than some of the others in my neck of the woods is Leon County. So I'm really concerned about what your proposals are and what you're going to propose, what you think we need to do about rural health care, because they're deserts. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, please.
You're recognized.
Thank you. That's a very good point. Like I said, one of the strategies that we are working on is the FRAME program, which is the Florida Medical Education Loan Repayment Program. And it is to assist and assess and provide recruitment and retention incentives for those health professional shortage areas. And so that's one of the strategies that we're working on.
Thank you. I'd just like to note that next meeting we will have a presentation on framing, so we'll be getting into that further. I believe it's Representative Redman, you're up and recognized for a series of questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we could go back to the slide that showed the primary care situation or the impending situation in the state of Florida. There we are. So, Dr. Spencer, this summer I went and visited my family practice residency program, my old program in Daytona Beach, and I asked the residency director and the physicians there in Daytona Beach, what's the answer to this problem? I offered them money. I offered them more residency positions. I said we could create new residencies. Strangely enough, their answer was none of those things. They said, we don't need money. We don't need more residency slots. They said, if we could just keep the physicians that we are currently training in our current residency program, most of them leave the state because of the policies of the state of Florida and because of something that they specifically mentioned to me were the fact that non-compete clauses are allowed in the state of Florida. I wanted to get your comments on that.
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. That is outside of my scope, and I'm not able to answer that question.
Members, do we have any further questions? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm trying to articulate this in my head, kind of on along the same lines as where Dr. Rudman is going, with 74% of physicians being employed. Healthcare isn't in the hands of doctors anymore, by and large. So as the Department of Health, we need your policy positions on what we do about that. And when we're talking about GME, which if we can get into that a little bit, other states do have policies that allow for residents to work in settings outside of the hospital setting and still get all that credit. We should be looking at things like that in our rural areas, or including in our curriculum a business, medical education should include a business segment so that physicians know how to operate a business instead of just being employed where all those decisions are made by Wall Street. So I know I'm ranting a little bit and lecturing instead of asking a question, but you are the Department of Health, and we need answers from you on how we can fix that. We're not all the experts, but we're here to help. And you're giving us data and nothing to do with it.
Any further questions or comments from Representative Rudman? You are recognized for one final comment or question.
I promise. Thank you, Madam Chair. There was another slide showing growing demand for staff where there were some numbers that I found concerning. You know, we talk about the physician shortage. I assume here shortly we're going to be talking about the nursing shortage in the state of Florida. There was one slide, I think it was slide 4, that showed that the one thing we do not have a shortage of is nurse practitioners. In fact, they are ballooning. We're talking about a 40% growth rate, whereas the number of physicians that we're recruiting is almost flatlined. I'd like to see if you have any explanation for that.
These data are projections. They are projection of the need. So we're expecting that we would need advanced practice registered nurses to grow by 40% to meet the need. Similarly, we do have a large shortage in physicians, and we're also expecting that that will grow, not at the same rate. I definitely understand what you're saying.
Well, thank you for coming today and sharing all of this information and taking all the questions and comments from the committee. I think there's some valid concerns, but seeing as we've switched a little bit around since last session and we're not quite with ACCA in this committee anymore, I understand it's kind of segmented and it's hard for you to touch both of those. But I appreciate your time today, and I look forward to getting the copy of the survey to the committee.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up, we'll hear from Raina Latournau? Oh, praise Jesus, I said it right, who is the Executive Director for the Florida Center for Nursing and an Associate Professor at the University of South Florida. And I'm still waiting on the sergeants to find Representative Schoaf's placard so he can be recognized as well. Welcome, Dr. Latournau. You are recognized to speak before the committee.
V, Thank you for welcoming me. If you can give me one moment. Is my slide right here? Thank you for the introduction, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to address the committee today. As you heard in the introduction, my name is Raina Latorno. I am the Executive Director of the Florida Center for Nursing, an Associate Professor at the University of South Florida's College of Nursing. I've been a nurse for more than 20 years, so when I present to you today, it definitely, you may feel some of that passion, so I feel like I need to disclose that. And then pardon me for taking the moment to get the slides up. You know, when you switch from PC to Mac, sometimes you feel like you've never used the computer before. So it is my honor to present to you all today. I wanted to start with an introduction of the Florida Center for Nursing and just making sure that I lay the foundation so you all are aware of what we do, why we are here. We are established in Florida statute in the Nurse Practice Act, Chapter 464. Our purpose is to address issues of supply and demand for nursing, including issues of recruitment and retention and utilization of nurse workforce resources. The financial support that we currently receive is from the Florida legislature. We have state recurring appropriations. And in the statute, it identifies that the Florida legislature feels that the return on the investment is going to be the data and the recommendations for policy. So a little bit of our history. The Florida Center was established in statute in 2001 in just one legislative session. Their first meeting was in 2002 under the leadership of then Executive Director Mary Lou Brunel. Mary Lou Brunel ran the Florida Center for 20 years, produced data related to our nursing workforce, supply and demand projections, as you may be familiar with. At that time, the center was housed at University of Central Florida. In 2020, the Florida Center for Nursing closed. And if you remember what was happening during that time, it was then more than ever that we probably needed the Florida Center for Nursing to be able to say what was happening to our nursing workforce during the pandemic. We anecdotally knew what was happening in the news. Nurses were leaving their jobs, leaving the bedside, leaving the profession. But we didn't have the data to be able to support what we would do and what decisions needed to be made. In 2021, the Florida Center for Nursing was reestablished as a one-year project through the Department of Health and subcontracted through the Florida Nurses Association. That's where I came in to help and support. My research aligns with workforce development, and I was able to partner on some of the research. And then as we fast forward into 2022, the Florida Center for Nursing is reestablished and permanently headquartered at University of South Florida, where we are today. We are poised to be able to conduct our research, report our findings, disseminate to you so that you're well-informed as you're making policy decisions. The mission of the Florida Center for Nursing, we have three mission areas as identified in our statute. So we focus on supply and demand, recruitment, retention, and nursing workforce resources. Our vision and values and mission are all established by our policy-setting board of directors. We have three major goals. Goal number one is to develop our statewide strategic plan for the nursing workforce. Goal number two is to enhance and promote reward recognition and renewal activities for nurses in the state. And goal number three is to convene various groups representative of nurses and others, as you see on this slide, pulling together our stakeholders to give them the opportunity to comment on the findings of the Florida Center for Nursing. But then we challenge them not to just stop there, but to really talk about what are the solutions and then how can we implement and execute those plans. And so I would like to start focusing with supply and demand, and thank you to Dr. Emma Spencer for presenting some of this data for the nursing workforce. I'd like to take a deeper dive into some of what you've just seen. So our supply and demand data, when we're looking at research, I put it into three buckets, if you will. We're looking at data related to supply. How many nurses do we have? We look at data related to demand. How many do we need? And it's important to also look at nursing education data because that's going to be the pipeline into our supply. You know, the Florida Center for Nursing, we're really in a position now that we can no longer only count, report how many nurses we have, how many nurses we need, but it's important to really say, what are we going to do to fix the imbalance if there is one? And so that's what we'll focus on today in the presentation. As you heard, we have more than 400,000 active nursing licenses, with the majority of the nursing workforce being licensed as RNs. One of the things that I would like to bring to your attention is the multi-state license. So nurses in Florida have an opportunity to have a single state license or a multi-state license. If you have a multi-state license issued by Florida, it allows you to practice across different jurisdictions that are participants in the Nurse Licensure Compact. In Florida, we have about 22% of our registered nurses hold a multi-state license, meaning that they can practice outside of Florida's jurisdiction, compared to about 30% of the nationally nurses. So not as many nurses in Florida are using that opportunity to go across different jurisdictions. When we look at the number of years licensed in Florida, comparing our LPNs, RNs, and advanced practice nurses, our LPNs are the group that has the most years licensed. Our most experienced nurses are there, compared to our Florida RNs and Florida APRNs. And to the point of some of the conversation with the previous presentation about the APRNs growing fastest and that's where they're really blooming, this slide is showing you just that. Our workforce in nursing has a very inexperienced, if you will, workforce related to the APRNs. They're new with the less years numbers, the lesser number of years licensed. Another important thing that I would like to bring to the committee's attention is related to our nursing educational attainment. So focusing on registered nurses right now, you may be familiar with in 2010, the National Academy of Medicine, previously known as the Institute of Medicine, had released the report and recommendations that by 2020, about 80% of our RN workforce should be bachelor prepared or higher. So when we're looking at a goal of 80% of our workforce being BSN prepared or higher by 2010, here we are in 2023, and we're still not close to that goal. In Florida, you can see trending our data since 2017 to 2021, we do have an increased amount of our nursing workforce being prepared at the BSN level, but we're nowhere near a goal of 80%. When we report data from the Florida Center for Nursing, we do aggregate the data and report statewide levels, but we also take a deeper dive into regional levels. And so here's the map of Florida, how we divide our regions. We do group counties together, and we look at Northwest, North Central, Northeast, East Central, West Central, Southeast, Southwest, and South. And so when we're looking at those eight regions, there is diversity within the nursing workforce, within nursing education. But when we're looking at our supply of nurses, what you see here is that the largest supply of nurses in our state are employed and work in the West Central region, followed by the South and then the East Central. The line that you see over this bar graph represents our population of those regions per U.S. Census data. And so this really is a beautiful match. We want the supply of nurses to be where our population is. And so we're really doing a nice job in Florida that way. When we're looking at registered nurse employment, absolutely, you've heard in the previous presentation, and you're probably aware that we do have growth over the past 10 years with registered nurse employment, and we're going to need that continued growth as our population grows and ages. Our projected growth for RNs in Florida per our Florida Department of Economic Opportunity shows that we will continue to see more jobs here for nurses. When we look at where the nurse is working, this slide is dividing our RN, LPN, and APRN licensees And so one of the limitations that I do want to bring to your awareness is such that there are nurses in Florida who hold more than one license. So there may be a single nurse who has an LPN and an RN license, or an RN and an APRN license. So one of the assumptions we make with our data is that the nurses are working at their highest license, so that we're not double counting them. It's a limitation because we don't have a way to validate that, but it's what I feel is the most scientifically sound way to handle it. So the majority of our RNs are working in hospital settings, as you heard before, but then we need to look at our LPNs too. The majority of our LPN workforce is in elderly care. Our APRNs are working in physicians' offices and hospital settings. And so what does that mean to you as a committee when we're looking at the aging population in Florida and the population growth? We can anticipate that we're going to need more resources towards elderly care and community care. And that's not where our RNs are working or our APRNs are working. If we were to focus on our LPN workforce, they're going to need more resources to be able to keep up with the demand in that part of our healthcare industry. We survey all of the nurses at time of license renewal, similar to what you saw in the previous presentation. And one of the questions that we do ask the nurses at time of renewal is, what is their intention for future work? What do they think that they're going to do in the next 5 years? And you'll see here that a lot of the nurses in Florida, both all of the LPN, RNs, and APRNs, all of the categories, are reporting that they'll probably work the same. We do have a large amount that are looking forward to advancing their education. Now, if you're adding these percentages, you may say that doesn't equal 100% or it's greater than 100%, because the way we ask this question on the survey is a select all that apply. So they have the option to say that they want to work the same and advance their education, for example. This data gives us the opportunity to really focus on if nurses are intending to increase their education or advance their education, what opportunities do we have to give them seamless transition from workforce back to education, or to provide educational opportunities that allow them to advance that education while they continue to work? When we look at the work less, work more, leave, retire, really for all of the categories, one of the things that is a limitation when we're asking intention for future work is that it's just that, it's intention. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to lose this percentage of the population in our workforce. I would like to shift now to nursing education and provide you some information about the state of nursing education in our state, because this is our pipeline into the workforce, and we've really done a lot of work over the past couple of years to increase the capacity of our nursing education programs to be able to allow us to have an adequate supply of qualified nurses. And so I want to focus on pre-licensure programs. And when I speak about pre-licensure programs, I want to let you know that we do talk in the Florida Center for Nursing. We do study practical nursing programs, or PN programs, which upon successful completion, a candidate is eligible to take the NCLEX PN, which is the National Licensure Examination for Practical Nurses. And we have RN programs. Our RN programs are divided into associate degree, bachelor degree programs, ADN, and BSN programs. In our state, these programs can be offered at public schools, state universities, colleges. They can also be offered by private schools, which are licensed by CIE, the Commission for Independent Education, or private schools that are members of ICUF, the Independent Colleges and Universities of Florida. We also in Florida have religious institutions that can offer nursing programs. Again, looking at our regions, you can see that we have the largest amount of nursing programs, PN and RN, in the South region. When we conducted our study of the nursing education programs this fall, there were 518 PN and RN programs in our state. Last year, at the same time, last fall, when we conducted our study, there were 487. So we continue to grow from year to year. As we're growing nursing nursing programs, we're increasing the number and we're increasing capacity of the existing programs to be able to generate more nurses to come into our workforce, we need to make sure that we evaluate the number of faculty we have. Faculty employment, as you see on the slide, is growing in Florida, and it's projected to continue to grow. We need to make sure that we have enough faculty members, adequately prepared faculty members, to teach. Otherwise, we're just going to increase a bottleneck. If we're increasing capacity, thinking that we're then going to increase the supply of nurses, we need to make sure that we don't have the bottleneck and we have the faculty to teach them. When we evaluate our nursing education programs, we do ask the programs to report what are the barriers to faculty recruitment, why are they not able to fill the faculty vacancies, and the number one reason in Florida that we're not able to fill faculty vacancies is because there's a limited number of qualified applicants. This is not unique to Florida, this is a national problem. On the slide here, we take a deeper dive into the programs and divide them by ADN, BSN, the PN programs, and then compare to the Florida aggregated data. And you can see that the LPN programs don't have as difficult time filling the faculty vacancies. They have more qualified candidates, and that's because the educational attainment level is lower to be able to teach in the LPN programs compared to teaching in the RN programs and higher. Typically, you need a graduate degree to teach in the RN programs. When we took the same question, the same variables, and asked, we asked the same question, but we wanted to look at it a little bit differently. Instead of looking at and comparing the ADN, BSN, and LPN programs, we wanted to look at the public programs versus the private not-for-profit and the private for-profit programs. And here we can say overwhelmingly that the public schools, the state university systems, the state colleges, and the public school systems are telling us that the salaries are not competitive, and that is the largest barrier to filling faculty vacancies for our public school systems. So I was hoping that your next question would be, well, what are the nursing faculty making? And so on this slide is a comparison of post-secondary education faculty wages. And you can see that nursing instructors are about in the middle, making about $77,000 per year. When we compare that to our health specialty educators, they're making at the top of the range about $134,000. And our history teachers down towards the bottom are making about in the 50s. But just to give you an idea of what nursing faculty are making. I did say the NCLEX at the beginning when I was telling you about NCLEX, and candidates will successfully complete an approved or an accredited program in Florida to be eligible to sit for our national licensure examination. And if you're not familiar with the NCLEX, it is a scientifically sound, legally defensible examination, and this is our opportunity to demonstrate competency at a level to enter the workforce, both for LPNs and RNs. The history of NCLEX pass rates in Florida, we have for many years been below the national average in our pass rates. What's concerning to me the most is that our gap is widening. We're not just mirroring national trends when we saw a decline during the pandemic. We actually are declining more than the rest of the nation, and so that gap has been widening. Comparing the last 3 years of NCLEX data to national pass rates, here is the very specific. Looking at our RN pass rates, you can see that we did mirror the national trends. We did dip in 2021 during pandemic. We did so. What I want to show you here, though, is that when we're looking at our RNs in Florida as a whole, yes, we're mirroring nationally, and we're not quite at the national average. But when we're looking at our BSN prepared candidates for the NCLEX, we're much closer to the national average. When we're looking at our ADN, they're not performing as high as the BSN prepared candidates, but they are performing a little bit higher than when we aggregate all of the candidates together. So here I also wanted to talk about the number of test takers, and you can see that we had a decreased number of test takers in 2020, and these are calendar years. These don't align with academic years, but we had a decreased number of test takers in 2020, and that's very much because in the spring of 2020, when our schools pivoted to go remote, our testing centers closed. So we had a lot of candidates that were not eligible to take the test until 2021 when they were able to schedule and get re-into the testing centers. So that's why you see a spike in the year of 2021 with test takers. Again, comparing our ADN-prepared candidates and BSN-prepared candidates, there's not as wide of a gap between the candidate pass rates in Florida compared to nationally for our BSN-prepared candidates. Then going back to our eight regions in the state, not all of the regions are equal and performing equally when we're talking about our NCLEX pass rates. So here is a regional analysis of the year 2022. This is our most recent data that we have. We'll be able to receive our 2023 data at the end of January in 2024 and then be able to produce a report for you in February of 2024. So the most recent data, 2022, you can see that we do have some regions that are at or above the national average. However, we have some that are performing much less. And the lines over this bar graph, the lines superimposed, indicate the number of programs for each region. So what this means is that if we are taking an approach such that if we need to increase the supply of more nurses, we just create more nurses by having more nursing programs and increasing capacity of nursing education, we may not get the desired result of those nurses entering the nursing workforce if they're not prepared enough to be able to pass the NCLEX to enter that nursing workforce. And that's what we're seeing in the South region here, that we have an increased number of nursing education programs. However, the candidates are not passing the NCLEX on the first attempt and not entering the nursing workforce in a timely manner. So sticking with the regions and really showing you the last 3 years of NCLEX pass rates for each of these regions, the majority of the regions in Florida did decline over 3 years, which mirrored the national average. But I would like to point out that Southwest is the outlier there. And in the Southwest region, they actually increased over the 3 years. So some of the next studies that we're doing at the Florida Center for Nursing is to really evaluate what were they doing in the Southwest, what best practices were they implementing that we can then scale across the rest of the state. But here, this just helps you to see that there really are some regions and programs in our state that are performing at a higher level than others. And the same goes true with our PN pass rates. Again, going back to the number of programs, I wanted to take a deeper dive because before I was showing you aggregated data with our eight regions and showing you that in the South region there were more programs but not necessarily great outcomes on NCLEX. Here, we wanted to take a deeper dive into the categories of schools or the school types and looking at our public programs compared to our private not-for-profit and our private for-profit. What you see here on the bars are the NCLEX pass rates, and the lines indicate the number of programs with test takers. So the private for-profit programs are producing more test takers, but they're not entering the workforce in the timely manner compared to our public and our private not-for-profits. Another deep dive that we wanted to take is to compare programs based on their accreditation status. And here you can see that the programs that are accredited are having a higher performance outcome on first attempt pass rates of NCLEX compared to the approved and the probationary and non-accredited. Here on this slide, you'll see unknown and closed. We had in Florida, we do have test takers that are eligible to sit for the NCLEX, and the NCLEX might give them a general NCLEX code because their program had either closed or they weren't able to be matched. And so we didn't want to not report those data, or we didn't want to not report or exclude those candidates. So that's why we classified them as either unknown, or we know that they tested from a closed program. And so in conclusion, I do want to let you all know that we at the Florida Center for Nursing are here as a resource for our state. We want to be able to provide you with information so that you can make well-informed decisions and feel confident that you are making those decisions with the information that you need. We will continue to provide statistically valid workforce data. We will analyze trends, and we look forward to being able to be a service to you.
Thank you. Members, are there Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for the presentation. Just looking at our nursing programs and some of those, the pre-licensure programs, can you talk a little bit? I didn't see anything about CNAs and home health aides and you know, kind of what I would consider the first rung of the healthcare ladder. Do you have any type of data on nurses that would show how many of those had a lower level of certification or you know, had worked in that space and ultimately had attained either the LPN or RN degree?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. So historically, the Florida Center for Nursing did not collect that data and report out that data. We recognize that there's a limitation there. And so what we've been doing over the past 2 years is collaborating with other agencies such as Career Source Florida and the apprenticeship programs, and really looking at how do we have those career maps, those pathways that we can take healthcare workers that are either working as home health aides, CNAs, and looking at opportunities to advance their education. And that is a pipeline into the nursing workforce, both for LPNs and RNs. I'm sorry I don't have that data now.
Thank you. Any follow-up? You're good? Okay. Next up is Representative Tobolsky. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here this morning. I have a question on the passage rates of the NCLEX when you were speaking of the South region. I didn't see that. You had shown that map earlier, but I'm going to assume the South region is probably the Miami region. Is that correct? And the Southwest region might be Naples and that area. Is that correct? Is there any type of further data that might show the reason that you said that there were more programs, but less pass rates in that Miami area. Have you determined whether some of that is due to maybe language barriers, or is it because the economic sustainability is a little different in that area? And are there resources that help these particular students in those maybe particular crisis areas, if you will, to not be able to pass to get over the finish line?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that. And the variables that you brought up you're spot on with what we need to study. And so that's something that we're looking at the Florida Center for Nursing. We don't currently have data to report, but we're taking a deeper dive into what are the differences between programs, what are the differences between candidates. A lot of our conversations and the studies that we're starting to generate are looking at language barriers, but in addition to that, even looking at K-12 population is going to be, or K-12 preparation, excuse me, is going to be an important variable. Where are our candidates that are coming into those programs being prepared for higher education or technical education? Are they at a poor performing high school? All of those variables need to be further developed. And so where we're at now, just like any research study, when we have our findings, it generates so many more questions. and the why. And so we don't have that data yet, but that's what we're looking at. In addition to some of those demographic characteristics and preparation, we also want to take a deeper dive into the educational programs and looking at class sizes, type of clinical education, experiences that are offered, but we don't have that data now.
Thank you. Any follow-up? And next up, we have Representative Bartleman. You're recognized.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions, and thank you, Chair. How many spots statewide do you have for accelerated nursing in the public education system?
You're recognized.
I don't think I have an exact number to tell you right now, but we have that data that I can report to you.
Okay. Thank you. Through the chair?
You're recognized.
So I would just, for people who don't know what accelerated nursing is, there's a group of students who don't go pursue the RN, maybe pursuing an MD, maybe pursuing a different medical career. And the accelerated RN gives them an opportunity to, after they complete their BS, to get the accelerated RN. And this will go to my next question. Currently in the state, there are only two programs at the public university system and private that allow students to apply and gain admittance prior to their BS graduation. That is a huge barrier because it creates a gap year for students to decide to leave the profession or not pursue it. Your university is one of them. You force your students to take a gap year before pursuing your accelerated nursing program, and by then they leave. The only two currently right now in the state is UF and UM that allow for that admittance before they graduate. So my question is, have you done it? We need RNs, but you make it really difficult because then they join the workforce because of your program constraints. Mm-hmm. Have you looked into changing any of those program constraints? And if two universities can do it, why can't the rest of them?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. And you're exactly right. Our recommendation is for a seamless transition, and we don't want to put those barriers. We're losing people with that gap year. And in addition to the points that you made, I'd like to make an additional point that in nursing education, we do have that second degree option, and we're seeing many candidates who are qualified candidates turned away from nursing programs, going into a health science degree or something else with still the goal to be able to get into an accelerated RN program. So we have a lot of work to do throughout our state. Thank you for recognizing the two schools that are successfully implementing a seamless transition. And so we have a lot to learn from that, and we can definitely look at how to scale those models statewide.
You're recognized.
Thank you, and I hope you can work on that because that's not something policy change, it's you guys. Mm-hmm. My second question goes to, and this is kind of what concerns me with the, I'm in South Florida, so if you watch daytime TV, you can get a nursing degree anywhere for $75,000. And, you know, we're the home of those private providers having those really low pass rates or never taking it. We were in national news. So I guess my question is, what can be done to maybe a truth in advertising when they come up and say, yeah, we want you to come be a nurse, but by the way, our pass rate is only 30% before you take out all those loans? Or is there something we can do to ensure that anyone who's doing this is providing quality education? Because I people come to me and go, I'm going to go to this program, and I know the pass rate of that program, and I'm like, oh my God, please don't go waste your money. But can we as policymakers do something about that? And then in terms of salary, if you're charging someone $74,000 as a private for-profit to get the accelerated RN, you can pay those nurses more, and there's a huge differential in your slide for the public universities, and quite frankly, the public universities produce a higher quality candidate than some of the private. So are there policy decisions you can offer us as a committee to kind of help with that? Because I'm not sure where we would overstep regulation and things like that. So I look forward to you sharing that with us. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you, Representative, for asking my opinions. I definitely have a lot related to what you brought up. So if I may start with faculty salaries and the public school systems, Absolutely. I would love to, but I would love to say it would be an easy fix and here's the answer, but we know that there's definitely more complexity to that. If we are going to increase salaries for nursing faculty in public institutions, where is that money coming from? Does it then go back to increasing costs for students and public education shouldn't have those astronomical costs? So there's a lot of complexity there when we're talking about increasing the salaries and being able to fill the vacancies. Related to the part of your question with regulation and the poor performing schools, absolutely. I think we have the opportunity to look at the evidence and to look at interventions that can be implemented or policies that can be made to have more regulation over some of the nursing programs, specifically in the South. What options can we offer to improve their pass rates if they're not meeting standards? Some of the policy currently in Chapter 464, identifying that nursing programs can be approved by the Board of Nursing and they don't need to be accredited until 5 years from time of approval. And then they have the opportunity to request a 2-year extension, and then they have the opportunity to have an additional 2-year extension. That equates to 9 years. 9 years of not being in an accredited program. And my honest opinion, honestly, is that we need to have a little bit more oversight there. If we look at the purpose of accreditation to be measuring quality, right? An accreditation body is not going to prescribe this is the number of students you have to have in a classroom. The accrediting body is going to ensure that the institution is performing high quality and has sufficient resources. And so that's one of my recommendations, that we would have a way to increase the quality of the nursing education programs in our state.
Representative Redmond, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Dr. Letourneau, for your help last year with the combat medics bill that's now law, so I appreciate that.
And we appreciate that.
It's good to see you again. So I actually have two questions. As I said earlier, maybe a good starting point would be to know roughly an average salary for each one of these designations. If you could maybe give us your best guess for what LPNs make per year, RNs, and then APRNs, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Redmond, for that. And I'm going to shamelessly plug our most recent publication, The State of the Nursing Workforce in Florida. This is available in PDF format on the FCN website, and I have hard copies that Mr. McElroy, if I leave with you, maybe you could help distribute. Thank you. But in that report, we do break down average salaries and compare Florida salaries to salaries nationally. And then we also looked at our adjacent states, because anecdotally, we've been hearing a lot of nurses, especially in Panhandle, complaining that the nurses are not staying there. They're going to either Georgia or Alabama. So in our report, you'll see a comparison of those states too. But just so the committee is aware, approximates, LPNs make $48,000 per year. RNs make $72,000 per year. Nurse practitioners make $105,000 per year, $105,000 per year. CRNAs are nurse anesthetists. They make $171,000 per year. And nursing faculty makes $77,000 per year. If I may continue with a little bit more, our nursing faculty, anecdotally, are reporting to us that their new graduate nurses are making more than they are making when they go into the hospital settings. And so being an evidence person, I wanted to see the data. And when we look at the average salaries entry level for RNs, our average and compare that to our average salary for nursing faculty, our nursing faculty on average are making $3,000 per year more than entry-level RN in the state of Florida.
Thank you. You have a follow-up, Representative? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more question, Dr. Letourneau. So if we could go back to slide 10, because you actually pointed that out. You said that kind of validated some of my questioning earlier, talking about the number of years that certain nurses were licensed. There we go. And as you can see, the explosion that's happened with nurse practitioners, it's only really been the last 5 to 6 to 7 years. They account for about 73% of all nurse practitioners in the state. So I'm gonna ramble just a second and then get your opinion on what I'm saying. So to me, I think the answer is right in front of us, right? We passed a law about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. What we are basically seeing, we are seeing people go to nursing school, but they're not graduating and going to work in the ICU or in the ER. They are graduating, and immediately with that diploma, they're applying to nurse practitioner school. And as my good friend Representative Bartleman said, these people advertise on TV all day long, and some of them are online, some of them are more reputable than others. And it's interesting that we would discuss both a physician shortage today as well as a nursing shortage, because the two are connected. As we get more nurse practitioners with autonomous practice in the state of Florida, it discourages doctors from practicing in the state. These residents who told me they want to stay in Florida, they look at the decisions we are making as a body, and they feel unwanted in the state of Florida. And I just, that's what I'm hearing on the ground, and I'd like to see your perspective if you agree or disagree.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So I can't speak to physicians. I hear you, and it sounds absolutely, I'm not surprised to hear what the physicians are saying. I can definitely speak to the nurses and what the nurses are saying and what can we do differently. So if we're looking at nurses, and to your point, not really wanting to work in that hospital setting, we have opportunity now to look at why. Why don't they? Are the hours too long? A typical business model in the hospital has 12-hour shifts, and that's the way that we would staff it. Do we have the opportunity to look at flexible staffing models? We also have the opportunity now to take deeper dives into care delivery models. You know, how are we supporting the nurses in that hospital setting to feel like they're doing a good job and providing a high-quality, safe patient care that they want to do? That's why they came into nursing. And so if we don't have systems changes to create healthy work environments and to recognize the value nurses bring to their jobs in the hospital setting, unfortunately, we could put a ton of effort into increasing the capacity of nursing programs and having this robust pipeline, but if we don't retain them in our profession, we're never going to be able to balance the supply and demand. And so that really is something we need to do. What we started looking at the Florida Center for Nursing at our last board meeting, the board of directors was very open to putting together some well-being initiatives, really taking some opportunity to look at best practices and what can be implemented statewide. And so those are the next steps that we're doing as far as tactics. But, you know, salary is an issue for nurses too. And some people think if you just increase salary, and please don't misunderstand. I don't want to say don't increase salary. Yes, we can increase salary. But again, the complexity of that with reimbursement, sometimes that's not an option. But what we're finding at the Florida Center with our Florida nursing workforce, it's more than salary. Salary is just going to be a smaller Band-Aid. They really want to work in environments that have strong leaders to support them, that have safe staffing. So I'm not saying staffing ratios. I'm saying safe staffing. When they need help, there's somebody there to help them. And those are the types of changes that we're going to need to see in order to fix the supply and demand imbalance.
Thank you. I'll come back around to you, Representative Skidmore. Thank you for being patient. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is in regard to some of those schools that have closed. And there was obviously the case that we kind of all know about where students were actually given diplomas that were fake. And so where are those students? Are they in the workforce or have those diplomas been retracted, or I'm not sure what word to use, but where are they?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I may have to defer that to the Board of Nursing. I would only be speculating on what I see when I am present in the audience at the board meetings.
Thank you. Follow up,
Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we changed the law to allow for APRNs to practice autonomously, it was with the idea that they would fill a gap of access in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Is the center, the nursing center, are you guys looking at where they're actually practicing and if they are filling that gap, or if they're really practicing, you know, on Atlantic Ave and Delray Beach, you know, doing Botox? I don't mean it disrespectfully. I would really like to know where they are and if they are, in fact, filling that gap.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So the way that we're able to address that and really see where they are working is self-reported data. So we ask them to tell us, where do they live? What is the zip code? What's the zip code of their employers? And there are limitations to that. The Florida Center had never previously differentiated the NPs by autonomous practice because that was fairly new. And then when the center closed in 2020, there were no changes to the survey. So we're able to collect that data now and evaluate it, but I don't have something to tell you right now.
Thank you. Any follow-up? All right, Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My question goes, when you can tell I'm surrounded by a lot of people that are nurses, because I know all this because I hear from them all the time. But I was thinking about some people who recently graduated, and they were placed in a hospital, and the ratio, like, they basically quit. So are there guidelines for the state? I know you don't, you're talking about more than ratios, but honestly, do we have guidelines for a ratio for them? Because if you have a whole floor and you're doing it by yourself, it's not worth the money you're getting paid. It's too stressful, knowing that they can get criminally charged for a mistake, not having those safeguards. Mm-hmm. So does the state have any requirements of the hospitals to keep those ratios? We did it for teachers, so are we doing that for nurses?
You're recognized.
I don't believe Florida has that guidance for providers and institutions in Florida. There are states across the nation that do have those guiding policies.
Follow up?
Thank you. Can you send the committee members the ratios that you see across the state? And I think it's when you talk about working conditions, I mean, we passed a law for teachers to have ratios, and we know they're leaving the workforce, so that would be important information for us to see what other, but states that are doing a good job, not the bad states. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any other questions from the committee? All right, seeing none, this has been a high-level overview. Yes, I'm supposed to thank you first. I have a handy guy right here, so you don't have to stand here while I explain what we did. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you taking the questions.
Thank you, everybody.
Now, this has been a high-level overview of the types of workforce issues that may come before this committee. As you start hearing from constituents and stakeholders on issues of concern to them, I do invite you to talk with staff to learn more about the background of the issue. They're always available to you as a resource. We'll be tackling important issues this session, and I look forward to working with each of you to pass legislation that improves the health and well-being of Florida's residents. This concludes our subcommittee agenda, and Representative Anderson moves that we rise. Unless there is objection upon the motion of Representative Anderson, this meeting is adjourned.